Do you like what we do? Well, let me introduce you to Friends of Near. This is a way for you to support the great work of Near Media Co-op, which we here at Near think will give friends and family the chance to actively support the community media work we just love doing. Joining is easy, and you can find out more at near.ie/friends or by email to friends@near.ie. There's a few T's and C's, but only a few. Promise. Go on. Let's be friends.
Now, on the line, I have Mr. Charles Cosgrave, and he is a veterinary surgeon, and he's also the MD of Village Vets. Good morning, Charles. How are you?
Good morning. Not too bad. Thanks for having me on the show today.
No problem whatsoever. And it's a very, very interesting subject we're going to talk about. It's about puppy farms and puppy contracts. Now, I believe in the UK, the government are going to bring in a ban on third-party puppy sales in England. Is that right?
That's correct, yeah. Third-party puppy sales are basically third-party resellers of puppies. So they get puppies from a breeder, and then they resell them themselves in pet shops. So they're not the actual owners of the dog who had the puppies that are selling them. So where this really comes in, has an impact on us here in Ireland, is that about puppy farms in Ireland produce about 30,000 puppies a year, which is a huge number. And a vast majority of these puppies go to the UK to be sold on through these third-party resellers. So in essence, this is cutting off a pipeline for these puppy farms here in Ireland. And the reason that's really a good thing is because the welfare conditions of puppies been produced and been bred on these puppy farms, and the welfare of the dogs that are having these puppies is really quite poor, and it's not very well regulated, and you know, a lot of them are working under the radar in a dark market.
Yeah, and in actual fact, I've heard higher numbers of puppy exports from Ireland. I suppose it's a bit of a black economy, isn't it?
Absolutely. Like, you know, these are all, you know, the numbers fluctuate depending on who you talk to, because the nature of the business is that it is all under the table. So it's very hard to quantify totally. But from our perspective in the veterinary clinics that we have, we see a lot of puppies coming from puppy farms, and the condition of these puppies are quite poor, and a lot of them become quite ill, and some unfortunately die, you know, despite our best attempts to save them. And if you think of the journey of a family who go to get a puppy, you know, it starts around the kitchen table or in the sitting room, and the whole family is involved, you know, and it's very exciting, and the kids are all involved, and it's quite an emotional purchase. So, you know, they go online, they look up a dog, and they're quite excited, and they make the journey down to, based on a couple of photos they see on some of the online websites. And by the time they get down there to wherever they're going to buy the puppy, you know, the purchase is nearly already done. So it's very hard for them to walk away if they think that something isn't right. And in some cases, you know, these owners, it's their first dog. They've never really, you know, experienced buying a dog before. So they're quite naive when they go in. They don't really know what's right or what's wrong. So our puppy contract is basically it's a select criteria that they can download off our website. And it's guidelines and criteria that they can bring with them and go and ask the person who's selling the dog a set amount of questions, and through those questions they'll get an idea of whether this is the right place to get the dog from, or indeed is it even the right dog for them. And we have guidelines on what they should look for when asking these questions, and then at the back of it all, then it's a contract to say that the dog's been sold in good faith and that they're going to look after the dog, and both of them will sign that. So it's trying to sort of safeguard people going down to going out to buy puppies. It's also to prevent puppy farmers peddling poor quality animals, or animals whose welfare has been compromised, and try and cut down on the extent of puppy farming in the country.
Yeah, and I think In the last month or so, I think we've all seen on our televisions where some puppies had been rescued from illegal exports, as you might, we'll call them illegal. I'm not sure if it's legal or illegal, but definitely they were trying to smuggle puppies across to the UK, and they were in very, very poor condition. I think they showed them on the news, and they showed the RSPCA looking after them, and that, and what condition the poor animals were in. And that's something that we forget. I think people forget is that when you buy a puppy, whether it's a puppy or a kitten, it's actually you're buying you're bringing another member of the family into the house, and you have to ask yourself, would you take a child in like that? Because in a lot of my friends, I don't have a dog and I don't have a cat, but I was brought up around them, and I have a lot of friends who have dogs and cats, and they are, you know, part of the family. They're another child, isn't that right?
Totally. Like, you're bringing someone in, that a pet into the house, that is, you know, it's a huge emotional attachment for everyone there. They're sitting on the couch with us at night time. They're the screensaver on our phone. There'll be our profile picture on our Facebook page. So, like, these are, you know, they're not a commodity. These are a member of the family, and they'll be with us for, you know, 15 years, maybe even 20 years. My dad's dog is 22, and, you know, she's still in good health. So, like, these are, they perform a huge connection, a huge emotional attachment to us all within the family. And, you know, we're a nation of dog lovers. Irish people, you know, we're great pet owners and we take good care of them. And it's sad to think that we're known as the puppy capital of Europe. And just going back to your points there about the recent raids, I think there was two raids in the last month or the last 6 weeks, and I think there was about 200 puppies between the both raids. And they're just the ones that they're catching, you know. So it's... And these dogs it's great that they've been rescued by charities, and hopefully people will go and rescue these dogs or adopt a dog rather than actually going to the online websites and buying one, because there are charities across every corner of the country bursting at the seams with dogs, lovely, lovely dogs that are looking for a home. So we'd very much encourage, if people are looking for dogs, that's the first place you check, is you go to your local charities, check them out, see what dogs they have, see if they're suitable for you. And it's one of the things we do in the practice, is we do a free pre-purchase consult with people who are looking for a dog, and we go through what type of dog they're looking for, what their lifestyle is, what type of work patterns they have, and we kind of tease out what we think type of dog might be suitable for them. And, you know, it's been great, because some people come in with an expectation that they want this type of dog because they like the look of the dog, but then when we find out what type of home they live in, what type of lifestyle they lead, and, you know, the ages of the kids or whatever might be going on in the house, we kind of realize that maybe this isn't the right dog, this isn't the right breed for them, but maybe they might consider a couple of different breeds. And we've actually been able to make very successful recommendations. And, you know, people, we're not there to put people off getting a dog, but make different recommendations, say that dog may not be suitable for your lifestyle for these reasons. And so it's about helping the people make good decisions and make informed decisions and making educated decisions. And, you know, everyone has an easier life on the back of that.
Well, I have to say you're speaking a real common sense there, in that we live busy lives today. It's not like years ago when I was a kid, that mammy was at home and daddy went off to work, and there was always somebody in the house to look after a dog and so forth. Where nowadays, you know, you've got two people in the house, you know, both of them are out at work. The kids are at school, so the dog's going to be left there on its own. It's not going to be getting the exercise that it should really get. It's going to be left on its... It's a social animal, a dog, and it's going to be left on its own. So you need to know what sort of lifestyle you're living and get your pet to mirror that. Am I correct in that?
Most definitely. It's very important that you do I suppose, wrap your head around how much is involved, because it's, you know, there's a lot of work involved in getting a dog and looking after them, exercising them, taking care of them. So it's not, you know, it's not a case that you can head out the door at 7 or 8 o'clock in the morning and not come back until late that evening. You know, dogs, they are social animals, as you said, and it's important to facilitate that. You know, and they are great fun. You know, like the dogs at home, like, you know, they're such fun, they're good crack, the kids love them. And the great thing, I suppose, I'm very lucky that I can bring my dogs into work, you know, and they're happy to come in and they're chilled out and relaxed. So they're stimulated the whole time, and they're, you know, at lunchtime it's great, especially on a day like today, you know, I can grab a bite to eat quickly and then head out for a walk with them at lunchtime, you know, and a 10 or 15 minute walk. It's great for me and it's great for them, you know, and I think it's one of the things that we're slowly coming around to, but I think a lot of Irish workplaces now are starting to realise the benefit of a dog in the workplace, that it, you know, they don't come in and start chewing cables and cocking the legs everywhere. It's, you know, they're actually really well, they don't do it at home in the house, so they're not going to do it in the office. So it's great, they're great therapy, and they really bring a different vibe to a workplace. So I would encourage people that do have dogs maybe to, you know, explore the idea of whether it would be possible to bring their dog into work and, you know, and bring a happier environment for the dog and happier environment for everyone working there.
Well, the pet we've got at home is a tortoise. So I'll have to have words with Ciarán here and see, can I bring the tortoise in with me?
Very good, very good.
But it's an old, I think it's probably a bit of an old wives' tale, but maybe you can tell me, is it true or not, that your pet, or your, whether it be a dog or a cat, tends to take the temperament of its owner.
Yeah, that can be the case sometimes. You know, it depends on the dog and it depends on the breed. But yeah, sometimes, you know, like, you know, if you're not particularly active yourself and you don't go out and you tend to spend a lot of time sitting down, oftentimes a dog will mirror that. So where we see that is, you know, with elderly people who may not be as mobile as they once were, or, you know, obviously not as mobile as a younger person, the dog will oftentimes mirror that, and the dog will be a bit more sedate and a bit more sedentary, so they won't exercise as won't be as inclined to exercise as much as maybe they would have been if they're in a different type of household. So it can be very soothing, and it can be very beneficial in those circumstances, because obviously dogs are great companions for elderly people, especially if they're living on their own. So when they start mirroring the personality and the habits and the traits of their owner, it enhances that bond, and it increases that level of companionship, and it's quite a reciprocal relationship.
Yeah, it tells me a lot, because when I was younger, when living at home, we had a couple of dogs, and they were all as mad as hatters. And just said to me that they obviously took after the family.
No comments there, no comments.
Charles, if somebody wants to get more advice or that on, you know, thinking about getting a pet, can they drop into the village vets and have a quick chat, or their local veterinary clinic? Is that a good thing to
do? Yeah, absolutely. Like, for ourselves, you know, you can pop in any time. We've 10 veterinary clinics around the city, and they can pop in to any of our vets and nurses, and they give them a free consultation just to discuss what type of pet might be right for them. And if they want to, the puppy contract is free to download on our website, villagevets.ie. And we'd encourage everyone who's thinking about getting a pet to download the contract, have a read through it, and if they do have any questions on it, to discuss it with us or their local vet if they're not near one of our clinics.
Charles, it's been a pleasure talking to you, but before you go, maybe you could tell us, are the Irish government looking at any bringing in any legislation to control puppy farms?
They have legislation at the moment called the Dog Breeding Establishment Act, and unfortunately, in my opinion, it doesn't go far enough in clamping down on puppy farming. It really facilitates it more than anything else. Like, just to give you an example of one of the areas that I have an issue with, one of the areas that revolves around staffing levels. So they insist that you have one person working there for 25 breeding dogs. But 25 breeding dogs, a breeding dog can have up to 10 puppies or maybe even more. So in essence, you're looking at one person looking after 200 dogs. Now, I can tell you, in our practice, if we have a female dog that comes in and has a litter of puppies, it takes a hell of a lot of work to look after them. And if you multiply that by 25 dogs and all those puppies, it'll be physically impossible to do that with one person. You wouldn't have enough hours in the day to do it. So that's just one of the areas that is I have issue with, and I could go on all day about this, and I'm quite passionate about it. But I feel that the Dog Breeding Establishment Act is not built for purpose. I think Minister Sean Kyne, who is responsible for it, needs to relook at it and actually tighten it up, and probably put a bit more common sense and practical thinking into it.
Maybe we can give you a buzz at another time and maybe talk about what type of legislation needs to be brought in.
I'd look forward to that, no problem.
Charles, thank you for having a chat with us this morning, and very interesting to hear about the puppy contract, and that can be got on your website, which is
villagevets.ie.
Charles, all the best. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Take care.
Bye-bye.